Zen. Zest, zip, zap, and zing. Number 4. An Osho talk. Given spontaneously at an outdoor meeting to an international audience of thousands of people.
The first question. My uncle, Pandit Satyavrat Siddhanta Alankar, who is 82 years old, is a great admirer of yours. He has come and stayed for 2 weeks at a stretch on two secret occasions in Koregaon Park just to listen to your discourses. Pandit Satyavrata is a noted Hindi Sanskrit scholar and has authored over 75 books ranging from subjects from the Upanishads to homeopathy. He was also Vice Chancellor of the Hindi Sanskrit Gurukul Kandri University at Haridwar and was a nominated Rajya Sabha MP for the full 2 terms. Today he is perhaps the best known and respected leader in the Arya Samaj. He told me that he does not know whether there is any such thing as self-realization, but if there is any person who is realized, then he feels that you are the only person who is realized, far beyond Jai Krishnamurti and Swami Vivekananda. However, he cannot praise you openly, as the Arya Samaj people would be upset and flabbergasted. He loves your vegetarianism, but feels that the expression of love that happens so openly and spontaneously amongst your sannyasins amounts to non-vegetarian cannibalism. Why, Bhagwan, do you have so many secret admirers? At least I am courageous enough to be your open admirer, even though you choose to call me a coward. You have also said that you will not initiate me into sannyas, even though I asked for it. You also said that this is an agreement and you will not break it. Pandit Satyavrata is well known to me, but scholars are always cowardly. He is a great scholar, there is no doubt about it. In fact, reading his commentaries on the Upanishads, I was amazed. Amazed for the simple reason that a man who is not enlightened yet can have such beautiful grasp of things which are beyond the intellect. He has been groping in the right direction, but because of the lack of courage, he has not been able to take the jump, the quantum leap into the unknown. The scholar lives in the mind. The mind is always a coward. It clings with the past, with the familiar, with the known. Mind consists of the past, the familiar, and the known. mind has no experience of the present and no opening towards future. It is utterly closed. Mind is like a seed, encapsulated, without any doors and without any windows. It is immensely afraid of the unknown. With the known, it is very skillful, clever. With the known, it can go on believing that I am very superior. With the unknown, it simply becomes utterly ignorant. The moment it encounters the unknown, a great fear arises in the mind. Then again, all your expertise is irrelevant. That's why he has been coming on secret trips to Pune. He does not even come to the discourses openly. He tries to hide himself. But that is the way of the mind. The heart has courage. The heart can fall in love. The mind cannot fall in love. And to be with me, even to understand me, is a love affair. It is not your intellect that is needed to understand. It is your intelligence. And remember the distinction between intellect and intelligence. It is vast. It is unbridgeable. The intellect simply means memory system. The intellect means a storage system for information. Intelligence is a constant revolution, a transformation. Intellect consists of information. Intelligence consists of transformation, moment to moment transformation. Each moment one has to die to the past and one has to be born anew. Intelligence has the freshness of dewdrops, early morning in the rising sun. Dew drops on a lotus petal, shining, so fresh, so innocent, ready to evaporate. As the sun will rise, they will evaporate and disappear. They will not leave even traces behind. Intelligence is always ready to die to the past, because that is the only way to live in the present. There is no other way. There has never been, there will never be. And that's the problem with the scholars. He is certainly a noted scholar. I have loved his books, particularly on the Upanishads, tremendously. It is a magical phenomenon that he has been able to write such beautiful treatises. And his grasp is only intellectual. He is not even able to believe that there is something like self-realization. And the Upanishads are born out of self-realization. If he was honest enough, he should have not even tried to write on the Upanishads. But scholars are not honest. They are cunning. They are not sincere and authentic people. Their whole desire is to be famous and respectable. They write not because they have come to know something. They write because that brings ego fulfillment. But you can see there is stupidity in many ways. I have never come across a scholar who is not at the same time stupid. Both the things go in deep synchronicity. A gentleman desirous of obtaining a parrot that could speak two languages at least kept searching for several months. He was searching for this parrot for his very scholarly wife. He wanted to give her it as a present. His wife was a great linguist. Hence he was searching for a parrot who at least knows two languages. His wife knew many. And she was so skillful with languages that it was difficult to find out which language is her mother tongue. She was equally proficient in all the languages. One day, the owner of the local pet shop called him and said that he had just such a parrot. On arriving at the pet shop, the owner informed the prospective customer that the parrot spoke not two languages but five. He was delighted, immensely delighted. So he said, "Just send the cage and the parrot to my home. My wife will be there to receive it." When the purchaser arrived home at 6 o'clock that evening, he asked his wife, "What is for dinner?" "You ask?" She replied, "You sent it home this afternoon." "Do you mean to tell me, dear, that you cooked the parrot that I sent home? The one I have been searching for you for such a long time? And did you know that the parrot could speak not only two languages but five?" "Why then," asked his wife, "did not he speak up?" Scholars are never known to be intelligent, well informed, but immensely stupid at the same time. Scholarship is a way to cover your ignorance. It does not dispel ignorance. It only covers it up. And by covering it up, you can deceive the world, but you cannot deceive yourself. Pandit Satyavrata had come to see me 10 or 12 years before, and I could see the misery he was in. Because it is impossible to deceive yourself, you know that all that you know is borrowed, and the borrowed cannot fulfill you. Mo, hi, thought I would drop in and see you about the umbrella you borrowed. Jo, sorry, but I loaned it to a friend of mine. Did you want it? No, but the fellow I have borrowed it from says the owner wants it back. The scholars go on living. Something that has been given by one generation to another for thousands of years. And the older it is, the better it seems to them. The old is respected by the scholars. And with that old, they become old. With all that ancient rubbish accumulating in their heads, they become just garbage and nothing else. But how can you deceive yourself? Deep down you know all the time that you have missed knowing, that light has not dawned upon you, that your inner being is absolutely dark. And as the death starts coming closer, the knowledgeable person becomes more and more sick. When Pandit Satyavrata came to me, I could see that trembling. He was trying to hide it. He was trying to pretend that he is not worried at all about enlightenment, but his whole concern was how to become full of light within. Knowledge has not helped. But knowledge has helped in one way. He became the vice chancellor of a university. He was nominated by the then president, Dr. S. Radhakrishnan, another same kind of a stupid scholar, for the parliament. He has written 75 beautiful books. And as you say, he certainly is the most respected leader in the Arya Samaj. The Arya Samaj was founded by another parrot, Swami Dayananda. He was far worse than Swami Vivekananda. And certainly comes nowhere close to J. Krishnamurti. He was just a scholar, a linguist, very clever in splitting hairs, very efficient in playing with words. And the whole Arya Samaja is still carrying his nonsense. When the founder himself is not enlightened, it is almost impossible to find enlightenment through his so-called wisdom, which is not wisdom at all, but only knowledge, mere knowledge. He had created many scholars, but he could not create a single man of enlightenment, single man of the caliber of Gautam Buddha, Jesus Christ, Lao Tzu or Zarathustra. But many scholars have followed the footprints of Dayananda. Satyavrata is certainly one of the most respected leaders in the Arya Samaj. So these are the two problems why he cannot come here openly. he had sent a message to me that he wants to see me in private. Why? Because he wanted to know something about meditation. But that is not something very private. You can ask it before others. But a great scholar, a respected leader of a religious cult, is afraid that if his colleagues, friends come to know about that he has been asking from me what meditation is or how to meditate, then all his respectability will go down the drain. In fact, to be associated with me is risky, very risky, dangerous. I am notorious. To be with me, one has to be at least capable of being notorious. I don't care at all for respectability. I am not a leader. I don't belong to any cult, any creed, any dogma. I am simply saying what I have known. Whether your scriptures support it or not is besides the point. If they agree with me, it is good for them. If they don't agree with me, then it is their misfortune. But I am not at all interested in being supported by the tradition, by scriptures, by religious leaders, by political leaders. I stand on my own ground. And I have known my original face, so I don't care about public opinion. That is his problem. First, he is a great scholar. How to ask a question? Because the question shows your ignorance, that you don't know even what meditation is all about. And you have been writing on Upanishads, which are nothing but pure meditation. And then he is afraid of his respectability in Arya Samaj. I have spoken again and again against Dayananda. So the Arya Samajists are absolutely against me. He will lose his leadership, and at the age of 82, it becomes more and more difficult to risk. One loses all courage. Death is knocking on the doors. How can you be courageous? So of course he admires me, but he can only admire me secretly. You say that he told me that he does not know whether there is any such thing as self-realization. He may not have thought ever that you will put it in a question to me. Now it will be known all over the world what he was hiding. You have made it open. Certainly, he does not know that there is any such thing as self-realization, because he has never meditated. It is an experience. And unless you drown in it utterly, become drunk with it, you cannot know it. When you go back, tell him it is still time. Because meditation can be learned at any age, even on the deathbed, because meditation does not need any effort, it needs relaxation. It does not need any muscular power. All that it needs is a restful consciousness. Hence, it can be done by a child, it can be done by a young man, it can be done by an old man. Very easily. It is the simplest phenomenon in the world. Self-realization is not difficult at all. It appears difficult because we never try to get in tune with our own being. We have forgotten the language, that's all, but it can be reminded. When you go back to him, tell him to meditate. Even though he is old, it can still happen. It is never too late. It is always time, because it can happen in an instant. It does not take time to happen. It is not a gradual process. Self-realization is a process of sudden enlightenment. If one can relax totally in the moment, if one can put the mind aside and just be silent, aware, one can become self-realized at the last moment of life too. When you go back to him, give this message to him and tell him, now you are 82 years old, don't be afraid of losing this respectability. You will be losing soon your life. And don't be worried about your so-called scholarship and your learnedness. All will be taken away by death. And it is better to drop it on your own. That's what meditation is. Rather than allowing death to snatch it away, then it hurts. If you drop it on your own, it does not hurt at all. It becomes a flowering. When death takes it away, it leaves a wound behind. When you drop it, there is grace. There is freedom. An immense weightlessness arises in you. And certainly he loves me, he respects me. If he says that if there is any person who is realized, then he feels that you are the only person who is realized far beyond Jai Krishnamurti and Swami Vivekananda, then he should gamble a little bit with me. Then he should risk a little bit. Then he should walk with me few steps, and I promise him that it can happen. It cannot be explained, but I can help him to experience it. And you say, however, he cannot praise you openly, as the Arya Samaj people would be upset and flabbergasted, so what? Let them be upset and flabbergasted, that is their problem. Soon he will be dying. And then these Arya Samaja people are not going with him, remember. If he can have a communion with me, that will be something that he can carry beyond death. If he learns meditation, then he has some riches which will not be destroyed by death. Otherwise, power, prestige, money, respectability, scholarship, all will be burned in the funeral pyre, and you will be going naked, empty-handed. I can help you to become so overfull with the inner, with the transcendental, that death is absolutely incapable to destroy it. You say he loves your vegetarianism, but feels that the expression of love that happens so openly and spontaneously amongst your sannyasins amounts to non-vegetarian cannibalism. Vegetarianism is the only thing that traditional people can easily appreciate in my commune. Hence, I am thinking to drop it. My reasons are totally different than their reasons. My commune is vegetarian purely for aesthetic reasons. It is ugly to kill. It is just an aesthetic approach. I have no religious antagonism for non-vegetarian food, because the soul is never killed. That's what all these religions say. The logical conclusion will be, then non-vegetarian food is not a religious problem at all. You are simply separating an animal's body from his soul, making his soul free from the body, helping his soul to be released from the body. That is the logical conclusion of all their so-called immortality of the soul. If the soul is immortal, then why be so much worried about killing? Then there is no problem. The soul will find another body somewhere, maybe a better body, younger body, more vital. But many people, particularly Indian vegetarian people, the Jainas and the few Brahmins, and he is a Punjabi Saraswat Brahmin, one of the topmost Brahmins of India, they can appreciate the vegetarianism of my commune, but their reasons are different. In the new commune, I have the idea that it will be optional, because I don't want to be associated in any way with tradition. If only this thing is there for the traditionalists to enjoy, I will drop that too. So tell him that if he is alive, he will come to know. Because my people are coming from non-vegetarian countries, and they are suffering immensely. Now, my aesthetic sense says I should not make them suffer so much. Protecting the animals and killing my own people does not seem to be right. They are suffering from many diseases simply because of vegetarian food. Their body is accustomed to non-vegetarian food. They have been brought up with that. And the sudden change of climate and the sudden change of food, it's such a drastic change that it disturbs their whole balance. So in the new commune, it will be optional. Those who want to be vegetarian, they can be vegetarian. Those who want to be non-vegetarian, they can be non-vegetarian. And then there will be nothing left for the traditionalists to appreciate. I want to destroy all the bridges. Tell him that I am thankful that he reminded me of it. And he says also that the expression of love that happens so openly and spontaneously amongst your sannyasins amounts to non-vegetarian cannibalism. That is true. Love is tasting each other. If you go deeper into each other, it is eating each other. It is non-vegetarian cannibalism. Mo, what do you call a person who is fed up with people? Joe, a cannibal. The cannibal chief was preparing to cook the missionary who had been captured the day before. You should not eat him, one of his advisors said. He is a missionary, a religious man. That's the reason I am doing it, the chief said. I think my people should have a taste of religion. And in fact, the discipleship, the very phenomenon of disciplehood is a kind of cannibalism. The relationship between the master and the disciple is pure cannibalism. Jesus says to his disciples, eat me, drink me. And that's what I go on saying. Eat me, drink me, digest me, so that I can become your blood, your bones, your very marrow. The disciple has to eat the master. About that he is right. And finally you say, why, Bhagwan, do you have so many secret admirers? Because this country consists of cowards. Otherwise, for 22 centuries, they would not have been slaves. And you say, at least I am courageous enough to be your open admirer, even though you choose to call me a coward. Yes, Ajay Krishna Lakhanpal, I call you a coward. Because those who are not open admirers, I don't know anything about them. But I know about you. Because you are an open admirer. And if you have taken that much courage, then now don't be cowardly at all. Then go the whole way. headlong. And Pandit Satyavrata is very old, 82 years old. Much cannot be expected of him. But you are young. You should not behave like a dead and old man. And you are not a scholar either. You are fortunate. You are not a vice chancellor. You are not a nominated member of the parliament. You have not written 75 books. You are fortunate. You can risk what you are going to lose. Calling you coward is just a device, but you are being cunning too. Since I have called you a coward, you have been telling to my sannyasins, what can I do? I want to be a sannyasin, but Bhagwan has said that I am a coward. And he must be right. And he has also said that even if I ask for initiation into sannyas, he will not give it to me. This is a rationalization on your part. You have been telling to people that Bhagwan has said that this is an agreement and he will not break it, so how can I ask for sannyas? You just try and see what happens. My memory is not very good. I have completely forgotten about what agreement you are talking about. Moreover, I am crazy. I can break any agreement. A Jewish mental patient was causing quite a stir in the institution because he would not eat the food. "I am kosher," shouted Muscovites. "I won't eat this food. I want kosher meals." So the staff hired a Jewish woman from the community to cook special kosher meals for Muscovites. Everybody was envious, for Muscovites' meals were much better than theirs. Friday night rolled around and Muscovites pushed back his chair after a delicious chicken dinner and lit up a big black cigar. This was too much for the director, who called Muscovites into his office. "Now see here, Muscovites, you are getting away with murder. You get the best meals because you claim you only eat kosher food. And now on Friday night, on your Sabbath, you flout your religion and smoke a cigar." Muscovites merely shrugged his shoulders. "Why are you arguing with me?" he said. "I'm crazy, ain't I?" Ajay Krishna Lakhanpal, you just ask and see what happens. Whether I keep my agreement or not, I am not a man of word. I am a man of silence. The second question. "Please tell us a few more sutras of the great mystic Paramhansa, His Holiness Murphyji Maharaj. And do you know Murphy's version of the golden rule, 'Do unto others as you would have others do unto you'?" I don't know Murphy's version of the golden rule, but I can guess. I know the man. He will say, never do unto others as you would like others to do to you, because their tastes may be different. And here are a few sutras of Murphy. First, it all started in the Garden of Eden, when man came first, and woman has been late ever since. Second, you can't tell how deep a puddle is until you step in it. Third, there is never enough time to do it right, but there is always enough time to do it over. Fourth, whatever the person at the next table orders, it always looks better than yours. Fifth, nothing is impossible for the man who does not have to do it himself. Sixth, eat dessert always first, because life is so uncertain. Seventh, if everything seems to be going well, you obviously don't know what is going on. Eighth, never excel today. You may have to live up to it tomorrow. Ninth, no matter how many ways you perceive that a procedure can go wrong and circumvent these, another way will always develop. Tenth, any woman who says it is a safe time of the month will give birth almost 9 months later. 11th, you cannot lose an old or damned golf ball, only a new one. 12th, a shortcut is the longest distance between two points. 13th, when an error has been detected and corrected, it will be found to have been correct in the first place. 14th, an object will fall so as to do the most damage. 15th, toothaches tend to start on Saturday night. 16th, a bird in the hand is safer than one overhead. And 17th, the first myth of religion is that it exists. And the last question. Bhagwan, our parents are here. Would you tell them a joke? Meera Asango and Anand Geho. This is the joke for your parents. I have some grave news, Abhi, said the doctor. You have only 12 hours to live. Abhi went home to break the news to his wife. Rosie, darling, the doctor says I have only 12 more hours to live. He announced. In that case, honey, replied Rosie, I am your slave for the next 12 hours. Your wish is my command. First they went to Abhi's favorite Chinese restaurant. Then they came home and watched Abhi's favorite television program. And then they made love before falling asleep. At 2 in the morning, Abhi woke up in a cold sweat. He had one more hour to live. He nudged Rosie and said, wake up, Rosie, wake up. I want to make mad and passionate love to you one last time. Well, grumbled Rosie, it is okay for you, Abhi, but I have to get up in the morning. Enough for today.